Just give the average Joe an insight of what's it like playing at this level.
Friday night's always been a personal favourite of mine. You've got the long weekend. Everyone's just wanting that release, that stimulation, just to watch a macabre sport of gladiatorial confrontation. And you feed off that as athletes. Like, you love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
You know what? It's not to be. It is not to be. I'm not going to lie, Mr. Nathan Williamson. It is not to be. We are sitting here. Welcome to the Drop Kickoff, everyone. We're sitting here on a wonderful, kind of chill Wednesday evening. The squads have just come out. Super Rugby's doing okay. We're doing all right. But, you know, not to talk about a fantasy top system or game that none of our listeners can see, but I've just resigned the fact that I am the Waratahs of this season. I'm 1-4. I've lost by such small margins, and I'm devastated. And there you are, sitting at the top of the ladder, still to drop a game.
5-0. Life is good. Life is good.
It's a cruel world. Rugby union. It's a cruel world, Super Rugby fantasy. The troubles and trials and tribulations we had to deal with. But aside from that, it was a good weekend of rugby. Did you enjoy it? There's a lot of games to like. Finally, it's nice to see that I can finally, with confidence, say that the Brumbies put in a decent game at least.
Oh, it's a great weekend of rugby. I mean, outside of the whole sort of Waratahs break my heart, but hey, I'm used to that mistake. That's like normal. It's normal, which we'll get into later. But yeah, great weekend, great quality. A lot of sort of high-scoring, close games, and a few upsets along the way. So, yeah, it was great.
I like to take the approach of now whenever people are like, oh, yeah, you know, another team let you down or this, and the other. I just like to say, pain's an old friend. That's what I think it's Doctor Strange who says it when he dies 100 million times at the end of his first movie. Pain is an old friend. So that's how we take it in this situation. But we kick off once again with a left field topic, as we always do, starting these episodes. And this one, again, courtesy of Nathan Williamson, is how many third graders would you need in a team to beat 15 professionals?
So essentially the inspiration from this has come from, again, trolling YouTube as I do. And you see those videos that sort of, I think it was in Japan or somewhere in Asia, where you had like 100, like 10-year-olds take on 3 or 4 professionals in soccer. And you could see it was just a massive bodies, but the professionals still were able to sort of work the sort of the gaps and work the sort of space and still sort of get some kind of dominance in place. So that made me think, if you're playing competitive, like, we'll say we're not going to – there is no fathomable way that we get a competitive scrum. So we're saying scrums are off. Lineouts are cool. Mauls are cool. How many do you reckon there is? I reckon you've got to start getting in the – if you look from a pack perspective, you probably need, I reckon, 30 in a pack.
One 30, for every 30 sort of, third graders.
30 third graders, yeah. One, it's average sort of 1-4. So you can, at least you've got sort of, someone's taking the ball up, there's 5 or 6 going to sort of take the legs and getting over the balls there. I reckon you then take another 25 and put them in the back line, just for sheer numbers. So, you know, teach them through their hands, get them going, shutting down space, just getting them just jumping at legs at this point. Basically get to a point where the other team, the professional team, can't run. And that's just sort of, that's the strategy in defense, and then just hope numbers works. I reckon 50 is a golden number. So that's my sort of over-under I'll set is 50. Do you think you need under 50 or over 50 to get the job done?
I reckon under 50. I reckon what you need is, I was thinking between 40 and 35. I was thinking sort of the around, because like thinking about how much it would take down a big boy, and realistically speaking, these having come up against several first graders who are playing several grades too low in my lifetime. Like you might be as a fourth / third grader myself, you might not be able. You might struggle to take down one or two by yourself, but one by yourself, but two of you could definitely do the job. I reckon let's add an extra if we're playing for against a simple case of, you know, add the extra element of them being a professional. I reckon let's do a chuck a third in person in for good luck. I'd say 45. You'd need 45 third graders all up in a line together with an extra line in the event that the first line is breached. and we just play like that, keep them down the end there. I wouldn't say that our execution would be good. We drop, there'd be a lot of fucking drop ball. It would just be a case of stopping them getting through pretty much, stopping the holes getting through pretty much. So I'd say 45. I reckon 45. So we're pretty much on par that, but a lot of boys would get injured. A lot of boys would get injured.
We're having rolling subs at this point. Like, and we'll throw this out on Twitter. Like, go follow us on Twitter. We'll throw the poll out there. We'll throw the question out there. Let us know what you think. Are we crazy? Are we just, is it more? Is it less? What are you thinking?
We're the After Hours pod. That's how we roll here. We're the After Hours pod of the Raw and rugby.com.au. You know that we don't give a shit. We just chill out here.
We're essentially just rolling in after like a full day and just still talking rugby because we love it.
Yes, indeed. It is true. It is true. So I love the answer to this question. We'll throw that out onto the Twitter sphere, see how many people think what the number would be of third graders who could take down a professional side of Super Rugby. And then we just put, 200 people on against the All Blacks. People won't know. It's the easiest way to get the Bledisloe back. Fuck yeah.
It's the old kids in like a trench coat. Like just get three or four of them.
Oh, yeah. Smart. I like it. Very smart.
Not gonna know till it's too late. Who's going to know?
Who is going to know? I mean, technically, the number of boys on the sheet, people won't know. It is time once again for Nathan's news roundup. Nathan, we have 90 seconds, as always. I think we've agreed that 90 seconds is the sweet spot. But you've got a lot of news to cover this week. It should be a cracker.
Absolutely. All right.
Yes.
Give him a countdown. Give him a countdown. I'm ready to go.
Your countdown begins in 3, 2, 1, go.
We start in Palmerston North as the Rebels were left on their Brad Shields as Harry Godfrey's cleaned up the Burn Boys. Lucas Ripley's, believe it or not, shocked the Hurricanes, but it wasn't enough as Geordie of the Barrett clan sealed the win. The Brumbies thumped Moana Pacifica in Canberra as the Corey Hotline went to overdrive. He dominated the expansion side as the ACT boys had the right stuff to seal the win. The Waratahs Charlie gambled in the heat, but were left saying no Ayosi Mas as the Drua raced out to a lead. Nick's favourite son, Lockie Swinton, levelled it up to send it to extra time. And if it came out to say Happy Valentine's Day, as he kicked the field goal to win it. In Hamilton, the Highlanders tried to avoid Daniel Corona, but the Chiefs said, see you later, Bradley Slater, as they raced out to a quick lead. Replacement forward, Nicora brought the Highlanders back into the contest, but it was too little, too late, as the future Western Sydney side secured the win. In Wet Auckland, the Crusaders were slaughtered to the AJ Lamb as the Blues raced away for the win at Eden Park. And finally, the Western Force got Nick Whiteline favour as they stunned the Reds in Perth. The chase TT was fierce from the Reds, but they ran out of time near the Jock Campbell as the Force jumped off the bottom of the ladder. In resign news, Mad Max said no to the Rugby League and went straight down Hell's Fury, Moorpark Road, and signed with the Rugby Australia. Time.
15 seconds to go. With 15 seconds to spare, he's getting better.
I could have put more in there. I had more news, but I was just like, you know what? It's like when you're at the casino and you're like, you know what? I've already hit like three or four times. I've won. I'm just going to cash out now. Take my chips. I'm going away. Trying to avoid the buzzer.
Mate, back yourself. That always works really, really well when you're in the casino. that doesn't lead to any bad nights at all. Backing yourself and going too hard.
You can't lose money in casino if you never get in the first place.
Gambridge.
So let's talk about the key interesting news points of the of kind of jumping into that a little bit more as the second part of our particular podcast this week. And of course, the first big one, which as of us recording it, was announced an hour ago or just over an hour ago. But it's been a lot of talk about whether Max Jorgensen was going to go to the Roosters. I believe he was offered a 3-year, $1.8 million contract by the Sydney Roosters, and then of course. Rugby Australia come back with a 2-year. It was a $1.6 million contract, I believe. Am I getting the numbers and the years right?
I think it was 3-year, 1.6, according to your overlord Christy Doran.
These jokes are never going to stop.
If I get a reaction out of Christy, they're never going to stop. And I think the Roosters are actually closer to sort of 800 to 900K. Like they offered him, it wouldn't surprise me if he's taken less to stay in Union.
Mm. But the boy chooses to stay, which is really, I think that's a That is a big, big. It's just nice to hear the new hear news of the players being committed to staying in Australian rugby. And I know he's been a product of the pathways for quite a while. So he's been in rugby union for quite a long time. I think his dad also was a Wallaby. In addition to also playing rugby league, but his dad was also part of the Wallabies. So I'm just very curious. I mean, have you spoken to Max? How is he a rugby lad through and through? If you're in Max Jorgensen's head right now, particularly around, you know, the amount of money that's been thrown about, you know, there was a lot of dollars being talked about there, wasn't there?
Oh yeah, but I sat down with him in February just to sort of chat for the pre-season and like throw all the sort of rumors from NRL journos around and all that sort of media, you know, saying, oh, he's going to come to the league. Why wouldn't he? You know, we're the greatest game of all, blah, 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 blah. Like, he was a union kid. He's someone that is, oh, actually, no, let me rephrase that. Cause I think he's union first, league second. And there's a lot, he's part of a generation who just grew up playing both. It is natural. There isn't, I'll sort of correct myself there. I don't think there's any union or league kids anymore. They're hybrid. They're kids. They play whatever they want. So, I think a lot of people are sort of saying, well, you know, he hasn't played a test match. We've thrown too much money at him. This is not about sort of, it's on two fronts. This is one, the potential you get of a 19-year-old who's already come in, looked pretty dominant, pretty comfortable as a fullback starting for, you know, one of the biggest sides in Australian rugby. He's already sort of shown that he can match it and actually would have probably made his debut for the Wallabies had he not got injured. Secondly, and most importantly, it sends a message to the rest of the sort of pathways coming through that, like, if a kid like Max Jorgensen says, hey, no, this is worth more than whatever money can throw out there. We need people like Max staying and saying, hey, you know, we talk about a golden generation and what it actually means. Like, this is actually something I want to be involved in. I want to sort of be experiencing when I'm sort of reaching the peaks of my career, but, you know, when he's 22, 23, starting to sort of fill out in his body and get more sort of maturity around his game. Like, you might look at it and go, oh, well, you could lose, you know, as sort of one or two players that are going to look out and go, well, he's taking my spot, but it could also mean three or four players or sort of kids coming through go, well, if Max is staying, I want to stay. I want to play with someone like him. I want to sort of, you know, he raised a good point. Oh, I want to play for a British and Irish Lions. I want to, you know, maybe play at a home World Cup. So I think it's more than just sort of, oh, they've thrown money at an uncapped player. Like, I think it represents a bit more than that.
Like, yeah, there was so much rhetoric and discussion around this. I mean, I'm not going to name names, but there's a lot of the chat was often focused around things such as, you know, if there's, you know, Joseph Suaalii's being offered, you know, how many millions of dollars, and there might be other players considering jumping ship after the World Cup last year. And also discussions, you know, because of the amount of money and the issues and the lack of trust between the players and the organisation right now. I'm not going to name names who it is, but let's just say we know who it is. But you know, I do find this decision very interesting. I find the sign this, and whether or not those claims have any merit or not, it does definitely send a message to a lot of folks. You know, if the news had been that he had gone to league, then it would have essentially been, you know, in the eyes of many people, a reinforcement. And I do, the more I've kind of, I mean, I've dived into other podcasts and stuff like that, and I'm doing a league podcast on over on The Raw. And what listening to the rhetoric is so interesting coming out of league. It is so interesting. I mean, they're incredibly optimistic, which is such a contrast to Australian rugby fans. And really, it does reinforce me how small and minuscule the differences actually are when it comes to those hybrid player to those players. And I mean, professional athletes. It's essentially we're arguing over professional athletes right now, because they've all at some point or another we've reached a stage of 30 years of professionalism more, where all players have effectively grown up playing both sports. So the transition over is a lot easier than some might say. But it does send a message. It does send a very interesting message that because of the fact that the Roosters were willing to throw that much money down to get him, but he chooses to stay in rugby union, it does send a message of this is more about more than just money, which is interesting. I mean, of course, you're a professional athlete and you want to earn and you do want to earn a living, and especially because it's an industry where, you know, it doesn't last your whole life. It's a finite you only get to be a professional athlete for a good 20 years at least. You're doing well if you have a 20-year career. And so to actually kind of say, no, there's more of a moral side to it than that, it definitely does send a message. But, I mean, I don't think this discussion is going to end. There will still be the cross-code discussions. I know that, you know, people have been talking about Curly Beale going to rugby league, and people have been talking about Jordy Pitaia going to rugby league. And I know that a lot of players will be coming off contract at the end of this year. And he's hoping that a successful year with the Wallabies might encourage people to actually stay and hopefully put that year that was such a mixed performance at the World Cup behind them, not just for the governing body and the board, but also for the players themselves, just to get some success under their belt. They may look at rugby union a bit differently. It's a weird one. It's a weird space together. But hey, how good though that Jorgo is staying? At least it's definitely a big win for the Waratahs.
It's a big win all around, I think. Isn't just, as I said, just a nice, if this was the other sort of field, sort of, if say he, this the sort of announcement tonight as we record was, oh, he's going to the Roosters, there'd be sort of blood over. Everyone would be crying about how good he is, and he's, you know, going to be the face of rugby league. Like, this is like, don't be sort of fooled by, oh, this is just, you know, Sydney-based RA looking after the Waratahs. Like, he's a good signing. He has a level head on his shoulder. Like, he's going to be sort of a player that you can just earmark as the future of this game.
And speaking of, from talking about the future, you know, a future Wallaby and future Wallabies of the game to current Wallabies, we're recording this on Wednesday night. So technically we're breaking the law right now when it comes to embargoes. But when you hear this on Thursday morning, this news will be out. And what is the news, Mr. Williamson?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I can't break any bug. No, I'm kidding.
I segued you so well.
let's break the fourth wall here. Again, sort of speaking to him last week, I got a sort of little bit of a heads up in the news, but it's all will be probably confirmed tomorrow morning that Michael Hooper will make his Australian Sevens debut in Hong Kong. He's, you know, dealt with a bit of an Achilles issue. He's, you know, had to sort of had that sort of awakening that, you know, to transform his body from 15 to 7s is a lot harder than just pick up a ball and they're like, oh, it's the same game. Like, you have so many different sort of styles of athletes. And by the time he listens to this pod, he's probably named the squad. And yeah, it's one of those ones I'm really excited to see how he goes. I feel like I'm in the minority by saying I think he kills it. Like, I've seen a lot of people say, oh, he's too small, he's not going to be quick enough. Like, what Hooper has on his side is that real repeat effort. Like, he is someone that just goes and goes and goes. And that ability, you know, his breakdown work is underrated because he's been such a target his entire life of, like, just two or three guys just sending at him and just going like, all right, you off the ball, done. All right, what's our next thing? He might have the sort of strength poke or cut over the ball or something like that, but he's in a seven circuit. It's going to shine. It's going to get so much sort of the Australian side that loves to sort of play that smothering defense, relies on getting those quick sort of turnovers and attacking from them. He's going to be a great piece, whether it's as an impact player playing big minutes. Like, I reckon he's going to thrive.
I expect he'll be an impact player to begin with. I think because that seven side is actually pretty deep, pretty relatively settled, despite the fact they haven't really, like, I wouldn't say they've set the world on fire this season so far. I mean, they've had some okay results, but I wouldn't necessarily say they've been on a level, especially in comparison to the women's side, who've, you know, finished second and I think won a couple of them as well. So I reckon we're most likely going to see him be an impact player for Hong Kong. But just finally, how good? It's finally good to see him actually on the field playing in a sevens jersey. I think he's going to – if he's an impact player, I reckon he's going to kill it. If he's an impact player coming off the bench and really bringing the game home, I reckon he's absolutely going to nail it as a player. And yeah, I think it's so funny that people thought he was too small. I was going to say that probably the transition probably from 7 to 15s would be a lot easier than the transition from 15s to 7s because of the style of game, the speed of game, how much open space there is, how involved you have to be. Whereas in 15s, you can kind of coast a little bit in terms of if you're being involved in pod work or you're setting up for a next move or you're getting yourself settled in the defensive line, you can have areas moments where you can organize yourself a little bit more. If your sevens going over to 15s, you can manage that a little bit better. I think if it's the other way around, it would be a much harder game to master and get your head around. So, hey, I mean, Dupont could do it. And if Dupont can do it, Hoops can do it.
And, like, he'll get a chance to play Dupont in that first, I believe, on the first day.
Yeah, that's right.
Australia, France. I believe it's, yeah, it's close to midnight to the kickoff, so a bit of a rough one here, but I think he opens up against Fiji and France. Like, that'll be two big tests of just where he sort of sits in the sevens landscape. And, hey, what better place to do it than Hong Kong, the home of sevens?
Smash the frogs, boys. Smash the frogs. I like it. Let's look ahead to – we're going to quickly ask one or two questions and then we'll quickly preview Super Rugby Pacific round six. I can't believe it's round six already. This competition's getting away from me, dude. The first question I kind of want to ask is, in kind of a quick-fire discussion, is right now we're sitting – it's right now we have three Australian sides entrenched in the top eight with the Rebels, the Reds, and the Brumbies. Brumbies back in third place. The Reds, off the back of their loss to the Western Force, have dropped down to fifth. It's a very close ladder up there at the moment. And the Rebels sitting in seventh place. And then, of course, we have the Waratahs and the Force, who have kind of now who are kind of sitting at the bottom of the of the ladder. Everyone on top of the Crusaders. Who the hell saw that one coming? I certainly didn't. That is news to me. I feel I feel very sorry for Rob Penny, because if you like, of course, everyone's like, look at the Crusaders, haha. Is there something rotten in the state of Canterbury? Which Christy Doran pulled me up for using that phrase. But then you actually look at the injuries they have, and my God, their casualty list is shocking. It is absolutely shocking. So many frontline players gone. It's worse than the Western Force's frontline casualty ward, which is also really bad. But
it's Force get horrific.
Force get the Force have got a shown, you know, I mean, the Force have shown potential all competition, but just have been failing to compete. Lo and behold, they show up and grab a good win against the Reds, and they face a very tough assignment this weekend against the Drua back in Lautoka. But hey, I mean, hopefully that win will give them some you know, a spring in their step. Add to the news that they've also just picked up Sam Carter, former Wallaby, who has signed mid-year contract, as you do. Think he'll probably have a pretty decent impact, provide a lot of experience, and definitely serve as a good replacement to Jeremy Williams, who is also out. Isaac Rodder, who is still injured, still out of the out at the moment. So there's a lot of injuries in that four side. So Sam Card will be a nice addition. But the question I want to ask you is, Nathan, the Waratahs. I know. Lost again by a margin of next to nothing in extra time. Oh my God, your face says it all.
It hurts. It's just new waves.
The question I want to ask you is, are the Waratahs actually fucked now? Because I know, and I'm not talking necessarily Coleman, because I mean, Coleman, the team has been competitive. They've just not been able to grab those vital wins that they need. But I've just noticed that there's a lot of players who are getting, you know, there's a lot of the squad has kind of stayed the same, a lot of similar. Of course, there's been some injury covers and players brought in onto the bench, but essentially the main squad has still stayed as it is. And I had worries after this particular game, because it is such a tight turnaround to the game on Friday night. I mean, how much has Teddy Wilson played, out of curiosity? He's barely played had any minutes at all.
I'm just going to shut this argument down right now, because I've seen other people make this as well. Jake Gordon is captain. He will play larger minutes for a halfback than you usually will. Answer me this question. What is better for a half? And Jake Gordon, right, is in his prime. He's not 30. He's not 36, 37. He's 30. He's in his prime. Mm. Answer me this. Is it better for a half to play 10 to 15 minutes on the bench, if that, because you look at Jake Gordon's minutes, it is for the first sort of five games. It's like 65, 80, 76, 71, and a draw, I don't think he came off. Is it better for a 20-year-old half to be playing 10 or 15 minutes off the bench, or playing 60-plus minutes for New South Wales Waratahs A's, these sort of clubs, maybe going back to even playing Shoot Shield, getting more minutes, actually developing as a half rather than just the 5-10 minutes that he gets and is told, all right, turn a game? Like,
I've not got an issue with Gordon, though. I mean, like, it makes sense that Gordon starts, but, I mean, Jack Grant I mean, there are some games where I would have put forward an argument maybe that Jack Grant could have, that Teddy Wilson could have come in off the bench for Jack Grant for a couple of those games. Not to say that there's anything wrong with Jack Grant as a player or anything, just considering the style that Teddy plays. But I feel like it's just one particular example, and I think it's a bit more excusable because of, you know, the Gordon is the captain. He's also playing very well, let's be honest here. Yeah. But I do slightly worry that with the squad dealing with the way it is, considering they've got to turn around against the Rebels after a very tough game in Lautoka. It's a tough place to play. Should we be firmly worried about the Tars now?
I'm not firmly worried. If they get beat by the Rebels, I would be. Because, again, no disrespect to Rebels, but a Rebels team without Andrew Kellaway, that's, you know, Tony Atuba off the bench. These are sort of, if you're only playing finals with you have to beat the Rebels who are sitting in seventh or eighth if you want to leapfrog them. That's just simple maths. If you then, not only that, you're sort of sitting, I think, 1-5 to start the year, which, again, sure, same place as where they were last year. But as I think we sort of highlighted last week, the run home after this is disgusting. Like Brumbies, Crusaders, Chiefs, Hurricanes. The Brumbies again. That's the next five games for them after that. You start losing all those games and you're relying on getting two or three of those, you're in trouble. As you sort of allude to there, I don't think they keep saying they're not that far off, and I believe them. I don't know if that's my head or my heart that believes it, but generally, like, you see how close they get in these games. They're just missing someone that just closes it out. I love Tane as a half, but he's just hasn't just had those moments. Like, he had a great ankle tap to send him to extra time, but should have kicked the drop, got to win the game. You know, missed the sort of penalty against the Highlanders. Like, it's just a couple of moments. He's just not sort of closing the game out, and that's hurt the Waratahs. But they need to just do more to not let teams run away from them and actually find themselves in winning positions. And once you sort of sort that out, you know, they're getting players back. Great to see Lyle Kaifukeddie and Will Harrison named in the reserves this week.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's Will Harrison.
You talk about a natural boost when you have a six-day turnaround. That's two massive sort of boosts for a playing group that's sort of had a really tough 87-minute slog in Fiji. So I don't think it's alarm bells yet, but if they lose this week, you've got to start. You got to be realistic and say, yeah, there's something someone needs to turn around for the Waratahs.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of in such a weird headspace with them right now because if they had won that game in Fiji, God, considering the run home that they have, if they had actually won that game, it would have set such a good platform for a confidence boost, just a critical confidence boost. It was there for them. They played that well. Oh, it's rough, really rough. So, I mean, I do hope that they can. I would be tipping them this weekend. I think the Waratahs will get it done against the Rebels, partly because the Rebels have just been so inconsistent week to week. And even with the talent that they have, I just feel like they're still not executing as best as they can with the talent that they have. It's just, yeah, it's so inconsistent. But, yeah. God help the Waratahs if they lose this weekend, because, like, aside that they should be favourites to beat at home, they have to win this game, surely. It's, yeah, not really any excuses. Similar to the Force and playing last week after they were, you know, 0-4. They turned up, though. They played really well. Let's talk this weekend really quickly. We can quickly touch on the Australian games. We've obviously got the Crusaders playing the Chiefs. Big news out of that one is DMac is getting rested for a trip to Christchurch, which I don't know if it's a reflection of, but they're probably, I think they're just resting him. I don't think there's any injury issue, but I mean, it does suggest that the Chiefs back themselves to be able to deal with the Crusaders with their current backline and their injury issues. Also, I mean, they've named a pretty decent squad despite DMac not being there. So should be a really interesting game. Waratahs playing the Rebels, as already mentioned. Then on the Saturday, Drua playing the Western Force, in Lautoka. Thoughts, feelings, opinions on this game. Do you reckon the Force can actually get a W here? Is it realistic?
I mean, the Force, you know, they showed the formula to how they can win games on the weekend. Just stop getting in their own way. You laugh, but it's true. Like, this is a team that was one of the most, I think it's still in the sort of top four for most penalised sides. They come out against the Reds, and as I sort of bring up the stats now, they conceded 7. Like, that's what they've been doing. They kept, for the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks, they kept just letting teams in off their own inability to get out of their own way when it came to just silly penalties, you know, silly yellow cards, just stuff that just made life so much harder for them, for themselves. Because when they're rolling, they have good enough players. They have great halves. They have exciting outside backs like Harry Potter. Bailey Kunzel was a revelation on the wing. It was great. Mm. But if you can just sort of go to Fiji, stop the sort of penalty load that they've been conceding, so they average 13 penalties a game.
That's so bad.
That is true.
That's really bad.
That's going like, that's coming from a game where they conceded almost half that. So that's you imagine what it was leading into that game. It was a lot worse. But that's the key. If they can sort of keep the penalties down, not get sucked into the Drua's style of, you know, trying to play really quick and trying to dominate teams, they've got a big chance here.
Yeah, it's a good one to watch. And, I mean, we'll also have the Super W fixture as well, which I think is going to be an absolutely scintillating game of rugby, but we'll get to that in our next podcast later this in the next day or so. We've got the after that match, we have the Moana Pacifica Blues game. I like to call the Auckland Derby, being played at Eden Park. Technically a Moana Pacifica home game, but let's not go there in terms of technicalities. Mm. The Highlanders playing the Hurricanes down in Dunedin, which should be an interesting clash. I know that the Highlanders have lost Jermaine Ainsley. He's out with a back injury, and a couple of other players as well who are out, where the Hurricanes have pretty much brought back in a whole bunch of their experienced side to take down there. So I reckon the Hurricanes should be a pretty decent shot to win that game. And then I think the match of the round to close it off, Reds versus Brumbies, the two in-form Australian sides that look legitimate increasingly. Well, I mean, the Reds were looking, until the game against the Force, looking like up there, top two, one of the best sides of the year, up against a rapidly improving Brumbies side. I mean, the Brumbies have not looked good until that match against Moana Pacifica. Anyone listening here who says, oh yeah, but it's just Moana Pacifica, who cares? No, the Moana Pacifica is actually a pretty decent side this year, and they put 60 points on them. That is a really solid result if you are a Brumbies supporter. Tom Wright had a blinder of a game. So they're clearly building very, very nicely. They've made some very interesting calls here. I know that they've brought the experienced guys back on into the starting side with the really talented youngsters being shifted back to the bench for this match, which is a very interesting call. Harry McLaughlin Phillips is out for the Reds, and Lawson Crichton is in. Very interesting match, Nathan. What are your thoughts, feelings, opinions?
Firstly, with Crichton back in, can we officially call this clash the Crichton Cup? Hudson Crichton and centers, Lawson coming off the bench. They did play each other once, but I'm trying to remember which Hudson. I think it was Lawson that stayed on the bench. Like, one of them didn't. Both in the name of the bench, only one made it on. If we have the Ryan Smith Cup for just the Australian teams meeting each other, let's call it the Crichton Cup. Outside that, I'm so excited for this clash. Like, there is, between these two teams, this could be sort of 75% of the worldly squad when you sort of get to July. There's so many, like, where do you start in terms of matchups? Do you start at the back with, you know, Tom Wright and Jock Campbell probably fighting for the same position in the worldly squad? Do you look at the nines when you have the sort of battle of the co-cup that's between Tate McDermott, sort of, who looks like one of the form nine so far, against Ryan Lonergan, looking for his own breakthrough? You look at back row, you know, Charlie Cowell against Harry Wilson, two athletic freaks that can just take over a game. Even second row, you know, underrated players, you know, battle of the most underrated players in Australian rugby, Ryan Smith and Cade Neville. Hookers, Noss Lonergan and Matt Fesler, who can score the most maul tries. There are so many little battles like this that I look at. Even 10, Noah Alessio and Tom Liner. There's just so many that I get excited for, and you go, this feels like a possible versus probable trial game. This is really... Well, if we need this game to be a solid game, to have some sort of confidence of what a Wallaby side, not what a Wallaby side could look like, but that these players can play at a test level and thrive and not sort of turn into a game which is just going to be error prone and just a bad watch. Like, this is the perfect chance for both teams to really make a statement and come out and produce a performance that can say, not only we're title contenders, but by the time Joe Schmidt names his first side, we should have the most selections when it comes to the club breakdown.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you're in Queensland, get to this game. Cannot stress it enough. Get to this match. This is going to be a beauty. I think we're going to probably see a record crowd, a pretty decent crowd here as well. It's got the makings of a very good clash at Suncorp if you're down there. Who do you see winning?
Oh, it's a tough one, isn't it?
Who do you see? Yeah.
How much do you put on last week's form is the sort of question. I said in sort of last week as well that, you know, I thought the Brumbies were still building into the year, and last year was just a sort of reminder of how good they are. Give me the Reds on home soil.
Yeah,
the bounce back factor. I think they sort of put on enough time to just sort of sit back and go, all right, that was a sort of, I don't want to say wake up call, but sort of a result of five really tough games going at it against quality world class opposition. I think this is the one, you know, a bit more of a freshen up. We're getting guys like Jordy Bataille back in and getting Wilson Crichton on the bench. Like, I think there's just going to be enough sort of class to get the job done.
I think I do agree. The fan in me is of course going to go for the Brumbies. Of course I'm going to go for the Brumbies in this game because fuck them. I want the Brumbies to win. But thinking about it as the Australian rugby fan with my Australian rugby fan brain right here, I think the Reds loss to the Force last week was more an exception than the rule. I think it was just a case of they've had just such a hard run to start with. And, you know, I think it was also coming up against a very well-disciplined Force side who can be really hard to put away when they're on form in Perth. And you could tell that that's that Force side, and I mean, Les Kiss admitted it, that they were just off that game. And you have those games. Every team has those games. Even the bloody Crusaders pre-Rob Penny had those games every now and then, occasionally, where you just are second best. I think there's one thing that I've been very impressed with the Reds. It is their accountability when it comes to a loss. I mean, the last time they lost a game, which was against the Hurricanes, they then made up for it by beating the Chiefs the following week. That's all you have to say. I think the rugby head in me, it says that home field advantage will favour the Reds and make them favourites for this game. But oh, I'd love the Brumbies to win. I would. I would love the Brumbies to win. Can't say no.
It's one of those rivalries that always delivers great games. So even if you can't get to Queensland, just get behind it, chuck it on and enjoy a great game.
Exactly. She's a short and sweet one. In a second, you and I are going to record our Super W podcast for the as well, which will go out on Friday. So if everyone listening, be sure to check out that Super W podcast and also check out the Super W games. There was a lot of good games to talk about in that from the previous round. Boy, there were some surprises. Nathan Williamson, pleasure as always.
We've got another week to get back on the horse and take that horse to the water. And you can ask that horse, you can say, hey, horsey, do you want to have a drink or do you want to swim? Yeah, and it's up to that horse to then realise what he wants to do in his life. So we're looking forward to, like I say, getting back on that horse.
And are you looking forward to getting back on the horse 6 months since we last saw you?
I don't like horses. I can't ride.
Give myself enough for cut.